Welcome to the Independence by Design podcast, where we discuss what it means to be a business owner and ways to get unstuck from the day-to-day so we can design a business that gives us a life of independence. What's up, everybody? I know you're going to love this conversation that I've got with Roger Roundy, who is the founder of Strategic Associates. I have gotten to know Roger over the course of 2024, and I can't tell you how much I wish I would have known him prior to selling our business and or every single year, because Roger and his team are what I call the missing team member, where I know a lot of people think, why is it that the elites don't pay taxes or pay so few, yet we're sitting here stuck footing the bill as the middle market entrepreneur and business owner? Well, Roger's going to answer those questions and talk about how legally people can be using the tax code to partner up with the government to mitigate most of their income taxes. And he's a missing team member because he's not replacing anybody that you're currently working with. He's helping everybody and getting you more cash flow so that way you can reinvest it back into your business or into other vehicles that generate and store your wealth. So if you want to know more about Roger, go check out the show notes. Otherwise, tune in for the episode. I know you're going to love it. What's up?
Hey there. How's it going?
I'm excited, man. You have a big grin on your face. I know you're not in your October to December Zoom meetings, but I think we've been keeping you busy. I'm excited to jump into this, Roger, because I have said to a lot of the people I've met, a lot of people I'm working with, that I have, you know, I haven't met someone like you after 10 years of diving into family offices and, you know, who's doing tax strategies. And it's either like CPAs doing varying degrees, and then there's billionaire family offices, and it's estate planning and moving things here and there. But like, I don't know if I just made this up, but I call you a tax architect. So like, there's my word for you, Roger. Before we jump into all the nitty gritty and the stuff that I think you and I geek out on, and I think a lot of people listening in are going to really enjoy this because it's different. Most people haven't heard the approach that you take, but what got me intrigued by you was your story and your background, because just the logic train, Roger, of how you ended up doing what you're doing made sense to me. And I think that's what might resonate with people. So you want to point to the mountains, tell about your five kids, however you want to kick it off.
This is my intro. Those of you who are actually watching this video, this is how I always do it. And it's just who I am, because I love what I do and I'm super passionate about it. But it's really interesting how most of our commerce nowadays is done via a computer screen. So somehow I've got to build enough credibility via a computer screen that you're going to believe the stuff I'm about to tell you, right? So what I do is I pick up my computer and I turn it like this, and I say, okay, that's the view out my window. I live in Northern Utah. I come from the risk management and insurance world, but I got involved with what I do via a problem that I created. And that's, I saved one of my clients too much money in their health insurance premiums, of all things. And the client came to me and said, hey, Roger, we've got a problem. You saved us $300,000 this year in our health insurance premiums. You're welcome. Not a problem. And he said, well, now we have to pay taxes on that $300,000 that you saved us.
You're welcome.
I don't know what else to say, right? I mean, so they asked me, well, is there anything we should be doing to help mitigate our tax liability? At the time, you know, this is probably 12, 13 years ago, I really didn't know a lot about tax mitigation or what that even meant realistically. But over the years, that kind of spurred the path that I'm on now, which is, how do I help my clients utilize the incentives in the tax code to reduce their taxable income? Now, I do fly a flag out front of my house. I drive a Ford F-150. I have a wife and five kids, two cats and a dog. I'm about as American as it comes, right? I love our country. I think we live in the greatest place on earth. A little screwed up right now, honestly, but it still provides, especially the entrepreneur, opportunities to create, which is just amazing. Right? Mm-hmm. We don't have opportunities in other countries. I love our country. We live in the greatest place on earth. And as citizens of this country, we should all pay as much in taxes as we're obligated to, but not a penny more. So I have spent my career over the last 12, 13 years just analyzing various programs, opportunities, tax incentives that our firm now represents and helps educate CPAs, financial advisors, tax attorneys on various programs where we can implement the strategy, reduce the taxable income, and ultimately help our clients save tens, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars in taxes every year.
It's awesome, man. And as we jump into that, we'll talk about how your approach is different than what most people might be experiencing or thinking that they should be experiencing, but they know that they're not. So by the way, I have to say, I just got off a client coaching call, Roger. He has 14 kids. So like when I know, yeah, well, but I was like, you're five versus my two. I always thought, you know, I mean, multi, you know, order of magnitude. I was like, holy crap. Yeah. 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 You talk about having to have, like, be American, have a farm or whatever, but, that's a lot of mouths to feed. So I think it's helpful. Like, as you got into the, you know, the healthcare benefits and stuff like that, like how did you get into financial services? Like, give us a little bit of background on your family, because like, were you selling clothes? I can't remember what it was, because it took me a while to figure out that. And like, where did the passion for this come from? Because doing what you do about being passionate about tax architect and tax code and all this stuff takes, I think the context is just helpful to understand, like, where's the passion come from?
Well, I mean, I grew up in a little town called Paradise, Utah. Okay. There's about 600-700 people, maybe. Right. And we're like this when it comes to spending money.
that was a big fist, by the way, for the people listening.
I went to Brazil on my LDS mission, and, you know, there's a saying called monkey hand, I think is how you'd say it. So you put your hand in the cookie jar.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So we're like this when it comes to spending money and taxes. Or in anything, realistically. So super frugal, but I'm also, you know, my partner always makes fun of me of how passionate I am. I'm kind of an all in or all out kind of guy. And so when I find something I love to do, I'm just all in, right? And so I see this opportunity mostly because it's an underserved area of our economy, mm-hmm. realistically. I mean, I don't know if this is where you want me to head or not, but if you are successful, you're killing it, and you're getting killed in taxes. Most people that I run into, they ask, you know, I ask them, so who's your CPA? And they say, oh, he's so-and-so, and he does a fantastic job for me. Okay, great. How's your tax liability? Oh, I get killed every year in taxes. Okay, well, your CPA may or may not know everything there is to know about tax mitigation, right? So I'm not here as a replacement of a tax preparer, right? Tax preparers have their responsibility and their job. I think the disconnect in our country, realistically, is that most people think their tax preparer is their tax planner. Okay. There's a pretty big disconnect there, because a CPA, they're busy. They're preparing taxes all day long, right? They don't technically really have the time to analyze all these different solutions that we're hence what the CPA is doing, mm-hmm. and give our clients a resource for advanced tax mitigation, right? So when we meet it with a client, it's, okay, tell us about your income. Where's it coming from? What type of income is it? How much are you being taxed? Once we do that diagnosis, then we're going to identify one, two, or three different ways in which we can mitigate their tax liability.
All right, so we got a little disconnected there, but as you were talking, Roger, you're talking about a missing team member, and I think that's crucial. And maybe you could because I think that's very helpful when people that are listening that are owner operators going, okay, I know I'm missing some big piece of this pie, the piece of the team, which is, okay, I should be able to mitigate taxes. Blackstone, family offices, private equity firms, all the big companies, they pay nothing in taxes. And somehow I'm sitting here at 30, 40% as, you know, I'm here in Minnesota, but they know that they should be getting something else. And I want to, like, maybe if you can expand upon, you know, first of all, there's egos that I know that you're probably very good at delicately dancing around of, like, what should they be expecting? What's the job of a CPA firm or a CPA? And then how you fit into then the other team or fit into the team, but then also versus like advanced estate planning. Cause like when I hear people go, I got a tax mitigation person, it's like, well, what are you currently doing? And like, is it estate planning where you're putting things in ning and ding trusts and, you know, you're doing irrevocable trust and all that stuff, which is important, but it's not like, hey, you got a $2 million cap gains issue and we want to wipe it out. Right? I mean, so there, does that kind of tee up?
Totally, totally. And that is, I mean, basically when you look at tax mitigation, there's three phases of life. You have your accumulation phase, which is right now. I mean, we're making money, we're accumulating wealth. And then we have our distribution phase, when we start using the money after we quit working, we retire, we start using the money that we saved. And then we have the legacy phase, which is when you pass, whatever's left over after you've spent all your, you've spent what you're going to spend is going to go to your estate. So those are the three phases of life. And within those three phases, there's tax mitigation that can happen in all three phases. So you may have an awesome estate planner and they've developed this whole plan to make sure that as much as goes to your kids as possible, which is great. That's an estate planning tax mitigation. Great. Are you doing the income tax mitigation? Right. That's what we're really talking about today is how do we mitigate the income tax? And to kind of to piggyback up what you were saying earlier, there's a reason why Mitt Romney, Donald Trump, Elon Musk, they don't pay a lot of money in taxes. Mm-hmm. It's not because they're tax evaders, right? It's because they have teams of guys like me on their payroll, right? We're more private practice. We're here to help the small to mid-sized taxpayer utilize a lot of the same mitigation strategies that the Fortune 500 and the elite are using. Because why, Ryan, as a successful business owner, can you not mitigate your taxes when the elite can, right? It's not about super access. It's just education, understanding, and application. That's what our firm does, is help bring those big business tax strategies down to the small to mid-sized taxpayer, because that's who I want to help.
Yeah, right? I love it.
I believe that the small business owner is the lifeblood of our economy. And if we can help those people, that's our passion. Right. So that's what drives me every day is, and I'm, you know, just to hit the tax mitigation a little bit harder, I'm pretty sure that our clients, you know, not to get political or anything, but I think our clients are going to be more fiscally responsible with the money that we help them save than perhaps our current government is, right?
Well, yes. I will hold back as well. And like, again, if we had constraints of stuff that we actually needed to balance a budget and didn't just, you know, create money out of nowhere, like maybe I would argue like, yeah. Anyways, I won't digress into that massive deep dark hole. But I think what's important to highlight, Roger, is we talk about the team and then how you work with the team and how you actually help with the income tax mitigation. Because effectively you're saying, okay, where are you getting your K-1s, your ordinary income? Are you selling, you know, real estate, stocks, big company, you know, a chunk of your company? You're having income coming from a lot of different ways, whether it's, you know, the short term or long term. And then how do you, you know, take this puzzle and fit it together to mitigate that income as much as that income gains as much as possible. But as I think about your journey here, I think is fascinating, because then I know we're going to talk about kind of the different ways that you diagnose and prescribe, and then how you fit with these other team members without stepping on people's toes. So again, it actually works within all the egos that are out there. Right? I mean, unless there's some, not always, right?
Tippy toe around it. There's some that I, you know, I've been through a lot of different conversations, and I've had clients sitting next to their CPA and saying, "Hey, why didn't you show me about this?" And the CPA says, "Well, I just think it's abusive." And then the client says, "Well, you're fired." So that's a sad situation. I don't like that situation. I want to be here.
And you don't benefit from it actually, because you don't you don't do their job, right? Like that's why I wanted to go into before we jump into that, because
of how many people are dealing with egos and or super smart people who are trying to protect their income and their clients and all that stuff, like we're going to address that. I think, I mean, the reason I'm bringing this up, Roger, is like your story just made so much damn sense to me of like how it got here. Like, it maybe give us a little bit of backdrop. Like, you know, you're doing the self-funded healthcare benefits. You found that tax plan, and then because you've been doing this for 12 years and you naturally just followed that tax bill until you figured out how to eliminate it. But what I found, so I want to hear that story, but then also with what I find fascinating is then your firm, because like I have stumbled across like Todd Ganos, the dude's a savant. I mean, like he read the tax, the House and the Senate proposed tax bill front to back before it was passed. And guess what? There's one dude. Your face. I know. Here's the deal. It's one guy. And he's out there. And so he's like some magician that you like, if you stumble across, you know, an hour of his advice, but it's not a system that you built a system. And I think your story arc helps. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. So yeah, I mean, we got involved with tax planning because of the health insurance problem, saving too much money in premiums. What do we do with the money we saved? Mm-hmm. I went to my smart guy on my team and he said, let's put the money into an 831B. what the heck's an 831B, right? That was my real introduction to tax planning and tax code, right? So we started doing 831B private reinsurance programs where we're helping business owners protect their own risk, get a deduction for the money they're setting aside. I fell in love with that particular strategy. I think it's awesome. We still do it today.
And that's essentially you're setting up your own insurance company that helps with your gap insurance. So your premium increase reduces your income, but then you're putting money over into a C corp that's not your current operating entity, right? So then you're mitigating one. It's kind of like the whack-a-mole. You push that one down and then it kind of pops up in another spot, right?
Well, once I started using 831B and started getting a lot of clients that were saving all this money in taxes, I was like, hey, this is pretty sweet, right? We can save in taxes. And then all of a sudden you start becoming a lot more popular. You can imagine when you're saving people tens, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars in taxes, how, you know, they start coming to you, right? So as our reputation as tax mitigation guys started to grow, we had more and more programs that were coming to our firm to say, hey, we know you guys do tax mitigation. Why don't you take a look at this strategy?
Programs as in people that had solutions, and you're more of like an architect, right? Right.
We become more of a not a product specific firm, but really more of a tax mitigation consulting firm. So fast forward to, you know, the last 6 or so years, we've been introduced to more and more tax mitigation solutions. So now we don't just have one program, we have lots of programs. And when a promoter, is what I'm going to call them, of a tax strategy comes to us and says, hey, Roger, we want you to promote our strategy. Prior to us promoting the particular strategy, we're going to turn it over to the SMART team. SMART team are the guys who read the tax code and enjoy reading the tax code, right?
I don't know. You have a team of the people that are the one guy that I discussed.
the resident geeks, right? And so what they do is they will look at the strategy, tear it apart for relevancy, for if, you know, does it make sense within the compliance of the code? Is it designed appropriately? So once my team is comfortable with the strategy, they will then turn the strategy back over to me and say, hey, Roger, yes, we're good with this particular program. Right. Once they're comfortable, then I'll add that to my repertoire of options. So now I don't just have one strategy, I have lots of strategies, and it all depends on the type of income, how much it is, you know, the client's disposition of how they, you know, what they want to do. So now what happens is Ryan comes to me and says, hey, Roger, got a business owner, he's killing it, gonna get killed in taxes. I'll say, great, let's meet with them. We're gonna analyze the situation, determine what type of income is it? Is it W-2 income, 1099, K-1, a capital gain from the sale of business or real estate, whatever it is.
Or combination of all of them, right? Which is that's what the biggest complication is, I think, these people have is like, hey, here's the deal. I've got this one company that's, you know, I'm getting maybe W-2 on this other one. I got this K-1 that I get from this random person. I got real estate over here, and I've got like, I might sell something over here that has long-term issue, but it's at the end of the day, I'm one person that has a tax bill, right? And so it's coming all over, and they know that there's just stuff falling through the cracks.
And that's what we do, right? We're going to analyze that. We're going to determine, you know, we're not going to prepare the tax return. Thank goodness I'm not going to do that for my life, but bless those people to do. But what we're going to do is do the prep work, right? So tax planning happens in the year you have the
Not prep as in the tax, but like they're prepping the strategy.
Is planning that a fair way planning to say? For the prep. How's that? So. We're going to analyze the situation. We're going to, once we see where the tax problem's coming from, okay, we are then going to discuss or educate the client on one, two, or three different strategies. When we talk about strategies, there's various categories of tax mitigation strategies that we can dive into now, or we can kind of continue this conversation however you want to move forward on that part. But the idea really is, what's causing the problem? And how do you mitigate the tax liability, and who's helping you have access to the various solutions? So that's what Strategic Associates really is.
And you have a team, right? And you have employees, you got processes, you run, like you and I started talking about EOS, a strategic coach, you're running Go High Level. I'm like, you're not some one random dude in the basement who just likes to geek out one by one with one client at a time, which is, I thought, so fascinating that you chose to build a company in a team, when you said private practice, I think that needs to hit home for people. You're not a CPA, you're not a wealth manager. You're going in there as a tax mitigation consultant saying, you're paying taxes. Where's it coming from? You have a slew of options that you put a puzzle together, and then the tax preparer still has to do the taxes, right? I mean, and like you've got this, because tell me about the shift of from product specific to like you have solutions and you back these solutions, right? So you're not this is not gray area. So maybe we can kind of talk about maybe the narratives people have in their head.
Excellent, because either when you're talking about tax mitigation, right? You're talking about taking money out of the IRS's pocket, right? I mean, you're talking about the behemoths, right? You don't really want to be messing around with tax mitigation, because ultimately if you take a tax deduction and the IRS disallows that deduction, it hurts a little bit, right? You have to pay the taxes, you may be penalized and so forth. So just know that I love what I do, but I'm very protective, okay? Because when a program is presented to our firm, one of the criteria for us to be able to present that particular strategy is I require that the promoter, again, just the program that we're utilizing, offers to our clients audit defense at no cost to the client. If you're willing to put your neck on the line and say, yes, we want you to promote this strategy, great. Well, if the client gets audited and its deductions questioned, then you're going to defend that. Now, we have our team that will defend it as well, but that's the idea, is it's not a matter of if you're going to be audited. We all have the risk of being audited, whether you make $5,000 a year or $5 million a year. Everyone has the risk of being audited. The question really is, when you take a deduction, is that deduction defendable? Who's going to defend the deduction that's taken? Because anything we do can be, every deduction can, every strategy out there, I say this all the time, it can be used, overused, and flat out abused. And most of the programs available have been abused, and that's why the IRS is always chasing them down, right? But it's important to understand how the IRS works.
Well, and just, I think on interrupt, just basic deductions, right? Like you have a plane and everybody in your clients are within 5 miles of your house. You know what I mean? It's that's allowed. Deductions are allowed, but it's not allowed in that specific circumstance. So that's where I think the architect word comes into play, because you're looking at the problem. Where's all this stuff coming from and what's the setup? And then how do you take all those tax codes and make sure you're fitting the right puzzles and pieces into the right places?
There's a tax principle of economic substance and intent, right? All tax codes really are is Congress sees a problem and they want to incentivize a fix. Okay. Well, the most common tax code out there, Corey or Ryan, what's the most common tax code that everyone has heard of? Starts with the
put your kid on, right off your house, part of your house, and then put your kid on the
barrel. Those are strategies, right? But which tax code does everyone know? Starts with a 4, ends with a K.
Oh, 401k.
Everyone knows. They've heard of a 401k. Most people don't even know.
Oh, ESOPs. And this is why, but this is honestly, your passion for what you're doing is like my passion for ESOPs or like understanding the exits and all that stuff, because it's honestly the funnest puzzle ever, right? I mean, that's all you're doing.
It is. That's what it is. It's a puzzle of how to mitigate the tax liability and understanding the rules of the game. Why did Congress create Section 401k? Well,
because they wanted people to save, because the lobbyists allowed no more pensions.
They wanted to incentivize people to save money for taxes. Yeah. So the incentive was you get to deduct the money that you set aside for retirement, right? 831B is an incentive that Congress created to incentivize business owners to protect their own risk. Understanding why Congress allowed the deduction in the first place helps make sure that if you do the application of the strategy, it's done within the intent and confines of the code.
I think is so fascinating about this topic, Roger, is I was diving into some of the 831B articles as my father, because for everybody listening, Corey's now helping sell your services. I mean, he's very passionate because we paid a lot of money when we sold the company. So he's very passionate. You can imagine about why this is. But as I started diving in, understanding, that's how I got to know you, is understanding what is it that you're doing? How is this all coming around? I read this, it's like a 50-page white paper on the 831Bs, and it was so fascinating about the executive, so legislation is designed with the House and the IRS just enforces the laws, right? So the IRS doesn't create the laws. And so like, I was hearing from CPAs like, well, the 831B is blah, blah, blah. They don't like it. And I'm like, they doubled the premium allowance 5 years ago. So I don't care how much the IRS doesn't like it. Like the law says that the Congress is fine with it. And it's like, well, and then honestly, Roger, I just go, and I won't go down the dark hole. It's like, well, guess who pays the politicians? The people that, I mean, it's like, it's so obvious what's going on here. But going back to your point, I've designed a lot of comp plans for sales reps in my life. And if you just want to drive behavior, you just drive incentives. And that's what you're doing, is you're just the most amazingly, you know, your team is honed in on, like, what's the incentive plan here?
Well, that's something that you and I have both benefited from, and also are going to realize that there's a potential punishment. Okay. We live in a very capitalistic society. Once someone sees an opportunity to save money in taxes, those who want to be aggressive will abuse the code, right? That's the IRS's job, is to sniff out the abuses. But when you understand the intent and confines of why the tax code was created or the incentive was created in the first place, and you act within the intent and confines of the code, then you're partnering with the government to achieve their objective, which was to incentivize a certain behavior. That's what tax code's all about. It's just understanding why the incentive is there. And if you do that, then you can stay in the black. You're not in the gray area. Even if it is an aggressive or a large deduction or whatever it is, as long as you're doing the way that it's supposed to be done, you're going to be perfectly fine.
Which I find so fascinating. When I figured that out, Roger, I interviewed this Todd Ganos I'm talking about. He's done 100 private letter rulings with the IRS where he just designs all this stuff. And then he gets pre-approval from the IRS. I'm like, what? That's possible? He's like, and I'm assuming he's just doing micro scale what you're doing. He's like, he's saying, well, here's the exact plan, get it pre-approved. And then it just mitigates the concerns that people have because they're just doing what they should be doing.
They're just following the rules, and understanding the rules of the game is super important, right? Not just doing fly-by-night stuff. You'll find that I'm not a fly-by-night guy. I mean, I'm conservative by nature, and I do love what I do, and I'm very protective of my clients because my reputation as a tax mitigation consultant is way too important to me to be throwing out fly-by-night strategies, right? So if I'm helping you do something that's a little bit shady or not going to be approved by the IRS, what good is that going to do me? Because 3 years down the road, you're going to get on Facebook and LinkedIn and say, hey, Roger's a crook, never do business with this guy, right? That's my risk. I'm not willing to take that risk. That's why we vet the strategies prior to ever presenting them and making sure that we have the legal counsel to defend the deduction that we're helping our clients take. But understanding how all that works is very, very, very important.
When I met you, like, and, you know, I heard all this, I'm like, duh. So I say duh because like, and if the listeners are, you know, tracking, you know, being an owner operator, you're like, this is exactly what I should be hearing, but they're getting, by the way, like, I mean, I will never forget when my dad and I, it was like the worst time of the year. It's like, oh, you guys killed it. You owe 360 grand in taxes. We're like, we have literally not a pot to piss in for cash. So thank you very much. And you have 7 days to pay this. And it's like, and they're one of the bigger firms here in town. And I'm going like, why the hell is this what we get? And so I want to tee up this question in a way. It's like, I don't want to begrudge CPAs because I mean, I have 400 and some thousand people have retired in that profession in the last 36 months and their jobs are getting harder. But I think, Roger, what I have personally experienced is there's a mismatch of expectations of roles and jobs. And that's like, it was like, oh, like, what should we expect from the audit review or tax filing? And like, versus like, what do we get? And like, and I thought like, as we're talking to, you know, clients together, it's like, oh, like if we don't expect them to do what you're doing, everybody's actually pretty happy with their CPA. And it was just like kind of this weird like, baha, but then how do we approach that without pissing off egos? And is that my kind of, I don't know if you, where you want to pick this up, but
yeah,
is that
making sense? I'm picking up what you're putting down. And then ultimately it's not this, it is setting the right expectation and understanding of roles, right? Some CPAs take on the role of tax mitigation guy, right? And they tell their client to buy more equipment. They tell them to pay their kids. They tell them about the Augusta rule. They tell them about these little deductions that they're used to helping clients take. And the client has the expectation that because you're preparing my tax return, you're going to help me mitigate my tax liability. However, the CPA doesn't necessarily always think the same way that the client does, because the incentives really aren't aligned. And it's not the CPA's fault and it's not the client's fault. It's just setting the right expectation and understanding of how this all works. The CPA wants to prepare your tax return and he wants to help you save money in taxes, but he doesn't have an incentive for you to save hundreds of thousands of dollars, because he's going to get paid the same whether you pay $100,000 in taxes or $10,000 in taxes.
And their risk with their license and their firm is off the charts, right?
The perceived risk, right? And that's
well said.
That's kind of where the CPA world does miss the point just a little bit, right? And I don't want to knock on CPAs, because I have a lot of good friends that are CPAs and that use me.
It's a business model issue. And I think that's what we want to address here, because I went down the same rabbit hole, Roger, with wealth managers like 10 years ago. And I was like, why didn't we get true wealth management when we were selling our business? I'm like, oh, because they sell us shit inside of our portfolio and they get a percentage of how much they manage. And I was like, oh, but does that mean they're all bad? No. Some of them, then like the really good ones have to crazy educate to differentiate, like, oh, we actually have a planning fee in here. Like, so like there's like the wealth management's got a spectrum of this. And I think CPAs are the same, but like, I think the big problem, which is what one of the problems I'm trying to solve, why people listening in on this, people that are owners have to take some ownership of how do these people work? Because McCory and I was like, we have a finance guy. What does that mean? Well, they're our CFO, our banker, our bookkeeper, our tax person. And it's like, because they do numbers things if we sell copiers. And then like, I guess my point is, by helping with these role differentiators, it's putting the expectations back onto the listener's plate, saying, hey, you can't blame everybody, but now hopefully you can find the right people that are not ego driven, that are, you know, they understand your role and aren't trying to do it. Or if they're planning on doing your role, they better do it pretty damn well.
Well, they need to know what their options are. Right. And the IRS has one job and one job only: collect revenue. That's their job. Right.
So simple.
Right. Yeah. But, and so if their job is to collect revenue and I'm trying to help clients not pay revenue to the IRS, well, the IRS is one of the largest firms in our country. Okay. Well,
80,000 more people here pretty soon or something too.
Yeah, whatever. Guns and all that fun stuff. And so ultimately though, we won't go down that rabbit hole for sure. But it's almost common. But that's kind of leads to what I'm trying to say, is that the IRS does a very, very good job of scaring.
Put the 80, was it the ADP security sign in front of your house, even though you don't have a security system?
Kind of, right? They're trying to scare the taxpayer into just paying the tax, because that's always your option. You have the choice of whether or not you're going to implement a tax mitigation strategy or pay the taxes. Well, the IRS wants you to just pay the taxes. So they're going to try to scare you into just paying the taxes. So, and Corey or Ryan, I keep calling your dad's name, but ultimately.
And so that means you guys are having a lot of meetings here, which is a good thing. Meetings.
But ultimately, Ryan, if you don't know something or you have just been educated on something, where are you going to further educate yourself? Where's the first place you're going to go? Starts with a G, ends with an Oogle.
Yeah, Google, and then I'm gonna like listen to the first five blogs that get
So, who do you think has the best SEO in the country?
Yeah, I'm tracking you.
The IRS. And so, when you go to Google 831B captive insurance, what do you think the first thing you're gonna see on the internet?
And how many CPA firms are out there writing 40-page white papers about why the IRS is wrong? No, they're filing taxes.
And that's the whole point, is that the IRS does a really good job of making sure that the abuses are being taken out. And I appreciate it. And I honestly, the more they scrutinize the stuff that we do, the healthier our business becomes, because one, it gets rid of all the bad actors and gets rid of my company, right? Because I don't do things that I don't think are appropriate, right? It's not worth it. I got a wife and five kids. I got to be able to sleep well at night knowing that the stuff that I'm helping my clients do are appropriate. But understanding how the IRS works and who they're main audience is, which is the CPAs. You know, CPAs get a weekly notice saying potentially abusive tax strategies to watch out for. Well, they use keywords like potentially, So just because something is potentially abusive does not mean that it is always abusive. It just means if you're going to do it, you got to do it right. That's my commitment to my clients, is that we're going to do everything as appropriately as we possibly can. You know, even with your father, we've been introduced to various things that you guys were working on, and there's things that I just am not comfortable with, so we're not going to do it, right?
Yep.
We are going to make sure that we do our darndest to make sure that everything's done appropriately.
Well, that, this is where it, I mean, it goes back to, like you said, your reputation. When I met you and I heard this whole story, which is why you're on this conversation right now, it's like, it just makes sense. Like, I mean, the reputation is way too freaking important to then say, okay, like when I started, learning about captives and stuff, I'm like, that's a great structure, but like, okay, but it goes back to like, it's a tool and the tool has a job for the project that it's on, but it needs to be appropriate. And I think your, how you have approached all of this is just so fascinating. And I, Roger, like, why in the hell are there not more people doing this? That's why when I go back to when I said, duh, is you guys see, like, what you're doing is what I think everybody expects. But then, like, right, you're not there. And it's like, okay, so.
And doing it, but they're real.
Right. And Todd, go back to Todd Ganos. One of my favorite things, he goes, he's so disgruntled with advice, just the advice community. He's like, I'm convinced every designation does 2% more. They educate themselves 2% more than everybody else so they can do nothing. It's just like, okay. I say all that, you know, tongue in cheek. But maybe two questions here, maybe question and then comment is, why is it that there's not more private practices like you? Because one of my buddies was like, do they just, the family offices and the PE firms and all that just suck up all these people? But then also, you get paid on a percentage of recovery. And I just, maybe we don't have to give anything because everything's different depending on the solutions. But if you want to expand on how that works, but then also like, why are there not more firms doing this where you have found a way to make a lucrative living in a business not working for the major, major elite?
Yeah. It's a perplexing question that I ask myself every day. I'm actually going to be creating what's called the Tax Planning Leadership Institute, which will be teaching the stuff that I do, right? Because there isn't enough people.
Can you use the word planning or is it mitigation?
I can't use exactly what I just said, but it's going to be something along that line. Institute, I can't use that term and all this stuff. But ultimately, more people do need to know. And I'm not the only one, right? There are firms that, you know, I have networks of these types of advisors that do bring more and more solutions to our firm. So it's not like we're the only ones out there doing it. I think a lot of it's just understanding that there is a better way. And, you know, I don't think it's going to be long before there are a bunch more of me out there. It's just, it's so far been a super underserved utilization. And guess what?
Is it more product? Like, you have solutions being brought to you. So is it more where there's like, you have captive people, you have charitable leverage deduction people, you have like, you know, different specific people that, but like they're more, I mean, that's what Corey was doing. Hammer nail. And then he met you. I'm like, all you have to do, Corey, is ask someone, are they paying over 100 grand in taxes? And the answer is yes, we can help them. Yeah. Instead of like jamming some product on their throat. So is it more product people? And then because you're, what you're doing is complicated as a puzzle, as an architect.
Yeah, and that's true. I mean, there's definitely something to be said about being agnostic to the actual product that we're actually promoting. I want to take an objective view when I meet with the client. You know, maybe an 831B is the right solution. Maybe it's an SOP. Maybe it's leveraged charitable gifting. Maybe it's tax credits. I want to take an objective view, and knowing what those programs available are, allow me to stay agnostic to the particular strategy. I'm going to educate. I probably know which way the client should go, but I don't want them to be felt like I'm not a car salesman or a copier salesman.
you had to do it.
I had to throw that in there, but it is super fun to be able to just take the puzzle, put it together, and say, this is how you can put it back together. This is what we're going to accomplish. And when it comes to the client CPA relationship, if you're out there listening to this conversation and you're like, you know, I don't really know what my CPA even thinks about this stuff. When I am able to educate a CPA and it's a coachable CPA and I can teach them, hey, let us do the heavy lifting when it comes to the advanced tax mitigation stuff, right? Mm-hmm. I'm not going to help you hire your kids. I'm not going to help you do the small stuff, buy more equipment, do the things that most CPAs want to do. But if the CPA really sees what it is, the value proposition of us working together instead of separate, it creates magic. And that's why
it does.
That's why family offices exist. You know, a family office, for those listening, is a combination where a wealthy family hires individuals who are their CPA, who are their tax planner, who are their financial advisor, who are their estate planner. They have all those people under one roof, which maximizes the entire legacy. We create what's called a virtual family office, where we want to have a relationship with the CPA. We want to know who the estate planner is. We want to know who the financial planner is. We work together to create that same model on the smaller to mid-size incomes, because I'm not worried about saving the multi-millionaires. They know
extra money.
They have that, right?
Well, I just think what Roger, about one of the people we're working with right now, you know, if we slash their tax bill by 2/3, they can now retire. And like, that is a big deal, right? It's like, well, because they have two companies. And it's like, well, you might not need to work as hard on the other company because you don't need to have two home runs. You can have a grand slam and a double. And I think it's, in going back to your virtual family office, like, because I think how you were talking about, like, your incentives are aligned with mitigating taxes, with the audit protection, doing things by the code. So like, you have found a way to monetize this advice in a way that you don't compete with other people. And, you know, you're not, when you say virtual family office, I think you're correct me if I'm wrong, but you're helping kind of that middle market entrepreneur or high producer build that, but you're not, that's not your service. Because what I found, the reason I'm bringing this up is, in the world of exit planning and virtual family offices and all, it's honestly, I've just found that 99% of it's all bullshit. It's all people that are like, oh, I do all this stuff. And it's like, oh, you still are an insurance person, or oh, you still are doing AUM. Or so it's like this weird accumulation of BS that confuses the owner even more and gets even less services. But like, what I found that you and I were talking recently, it's like, you don't compete with the investment banker when they sell. You don't compete with the wealth manager. You don't compete with the CPA. You don't compete with anybody. You're actually taking the money that would have gone to the government and redirecting it to fund all of the stuff that the owner needs anyways. And you found a way to align yourself with that. Is there other firms that you know of that have structured it like this? I mean, it's just so...
There are definitely some out there that do that, right? And there's not very many. Okay. And just to kind of hit on what you said earlier about tax mitigation, right? If we help you save money in taxes, the money that you're saving in taxes that was going to go off to the government to control, we want to bring that money back into your life and into your legacy. So the tax savings themselves, right? That's really not money we're going to go buy a fancier car or a bigger boat with, right? We're going to take that money, we're going to put it back into your life and into your legacy, you know, whether it's coming. Whether you have a financial advisor that's going to manage that money, or our firm's going to manage that money, ultimately, we got to be super careful with the money that we're saving in taxes. Let's put it back into your life and into your legacy. And bringing that control to the taxpayer is what we're super passionate about.
Yeah. And I just want to address, because I've just been in this world for so long, that you said even you manage the money, but like, your incentives are not to manage the money. Your firm's revenue doesn't come from just the AUM. And I think that's really important, because I just know that some of the intricacies of some of the clients that I've referred your way, where if they implement some of these strategies, there's money in motion that needs to be allocated into certain vehicles, and that needs to be done, and your firm helps with people. Like, is that a fair way to say it? Because because that could have been a red alert for someone going, oh, he's an AUM guy. Does that make sense?
When I say manage the money, it's just, let's put the money someplace safe, secure, growing. Right, that's all your benefits. I don't really care.
Yep, yep.
I'm just, the principles are there. Right.
And it was the right words. And I think in another way of saying it too, which is why I think it's so awesome, because you're not replacing anybody. You're coming there, and it's like, we're effectively introducing a potential another 30% increase in cash flow to do whatever the hell the person wants to do for their goals, which is why you and I started hitting it off right off the bat, because like, I'm helping people go, hey, if you grow the cash flow equity valuation of your company and you're paying 30% in taxes every single year, and then by the way, when you hit the jackpot, it's 50%. It's like, well, what if you didn't have to do that and you could get to your goal 50% faster? It's like, that would be interesting. And I think what's so super fascinating, Roger, is I brought on recently 6 to 7 coaching clients now, and it's like this whole, like, build out that model,
So these owners can get the distributions to satisfy their income needs so they can hire a couple $100,000 person to run their company, and then they can have choices to do whatever they want. But that leap to then hire that person to get to the cash flow out of the distributions, you're freeing up the most important amount of money so they can do this. They don't have to work for three more years.
We're finding the money for them to be able to do that, right? Right. That's the, you know, your independence by design, right? The design is missing a piece, and it's the tax mitigation. And we're going to find that money, and we're going to be able to utilize that money to maximize the whole opportunity that you've created. I mean, business owners take a ton of risk. Let's be honest, right? I mean, your dad took a ton of risk, right? And he was finally rewarded. And, you know, it worked out well-ish. He just missed out on the opportunity of being able to keep more of the money that he's making because he didn't have all the tools available to help him make his tax.
Well, and let's just pull that thread, because honestly, if we could, and I always say, I wouldn't change a thing about my past, but I'm happy about the changes I've made.
Sure.
It's like no regrets. But like, if I were to go mechanically, what could we have done differently? If we would have found you, Corey could have still made 300 to 400 grand in distributions while I was able to reinvest and grow the company. And I'd have a $100 million company right now. But like, we couldn't figure out that cash flow jigsaw. And it was like, pull the ripcord, get the pile of money. And here's some for Ryan, here's some for Corey. But it was like just such a knee-jerk decision, instead of saying, how do we architect the actual plan that we want to have?
That's what we're all about, right? Is providing those additional opportunities. And whenever I do a meeting with Corey, you know, I always tease him because he always is crying in the background saying, oh, why did I have this when I was doing business, right? And when I sold my business, how could I have saved 50% more in, you know, in taxes and so forth? So the opportunity is there. I think the ultimate story is, look, if you have a problem, let's analyze the situation. Let's design a tax mitigation plan. We're not here to replace anybody on the team. We're here to be a new tool, a new member of the team, probably a very valuable one. Just to be candid, I'm not
funding the rest of the team.
I'm not egotistical, Ryan, as you probably have guessed by now. I just love what I do, and I'm very passionate about it. But I know that there are ways in which we can help the successful entrepreneur utilize the same stuff that the elite and Fortune 500 companies are doing. Let's just work together to figure out what those solutions are. And that's the story, and I'm going to stick to it.
You're sticking to it. So. I know we got less than 2 minutes here, Riz. You got to run. So I want to just tee up, because, you know, with my new business model, I am not selling any services. I'm just pointing people in the right direction with the people that they need to get to their goals. So it's my, you know, with mine, it's education and the coaching. And, you know, to your exact last point, if we can find more money to then hire the executive search firm or put an executive comp plan in place or do an ESOP or invest in the strategies or, you know, whatever the heck the owner needs, you become just such a freaking natural next step for someone to say, okay, you got to be sitting down. And I'll kind of tee it up, and then maybe like just the framework, and then you could add any other additional context. But over 100 grand in taxes, because you need money to be able to move into certain vehicles in order to actually make some of these things work. But over 100 grand in taxes, it's something that's a viable opportunity to meet with you. Corey's also one of your extensions now as a tax mitigation specialist. But talk about like timing. I mean, because the natural next step is you and Corey will get on a call with someone for a tax strategy call, 45 minutes, talk about where the income's coming from, to talk about the varying different solutions and that could be possible to tee it up to your delivery team. That's the ultimate goal. But like, talk about timeline, like, you know, what is the right structure so someone's not freaking out, hair on fire, it's December 30th, which I know you still deal with people doing that, but.
That is, don't invite me to the New Year's Eve party. That's what I always say. planning happens all year long. Right. But a lot of times you don't know how much income you've actually going to make until towards the end of the year. But once you know how much income you're going to have and that you know you're going to have a tax problem, that's when you do the tax planning. It doesn't matter if it's July or if it's November.
So people doing estimated taxes, that's a good way to, you know, start looking at.
So as you get to know these, once you create the timeline, really what I need to know is what your projected taxable income is going to be. Once you know that number,
where's it going to come from? Pretty much.
Yeah. Where's it going to come from? Are you selling your business or you just have a large ordinary income from just killing it? Right. That's once you know those numbers, all I need is that. Bring me the number. We're going to design a strategy, design a combination of strategies. We're going to put and implement those strategies. But the key to this is tax planning happens in the year you have the tax problem. Don't come to me in March and April and say, hey, what can I do for last year? Right? You need to take control of your situation. And that control happens at minimum in fourth quarter, hopefully soon. Mm-hmm. But once you know that income, that's when you want to implement the strategies. Now, I am going to throw it out there. There are ways to mitigate tax liability for prior years. Okay. So if you do are still staring down the barrel of a big tax problem for 2023, I do have a solution if you haven't filed your tax.
There's less options, right?
I mean, less options, right? Yep. Time is now. It is crucial, though, prior to the end of the year to implement the strategies.
And what we will do, because I know you got to run, maybe you'll go to the bathroom in between your calls, we can put your intake form and Corey's intake form in the show notes. So that way, again, it's, you know, a bit, just a basic, do you apply or, you know, applying, making sure you qualify. If so, you and your team are trying to get people connected to the right person on your team, given the current situation, right?
Yep. We have three or four different advisors who will work with the client depending on the amount of income they actually have. And so whether it's me, Caden, Corbin, Derek, whoever's on the team that fits that criteria, we'll meet with the client, analyze the situation, and then start working on creating the plan. So,
any last words before you bolt?
Love what you're doing, Ryan. I mean, ultimately, I love what your passion is about, helping business owners be successful and create something that they, one, don't want to retire from. But when they do retire from it, they're going to get as much as possible. And that's what the independence by design whole concept is. So let's maximize. We're working our tails off. I mean, right. You've met business owners that are just out there, and they're smart. They figured out how to make money. Our job is to help them keep the money. Okay. So
what's my favorite? I'll let you part. And amen. I appreciate that all. My favorite, end on my favorite statement that you have.
All right. Which one's that?
I don't know if you know which one it is.
Your job.
Yeah,
your job is to make as much money as you possibly can. I can't help you make any more money. You go out and kill it. That's your job. My job is to help you keep as much money as you possibly can. Don't be afraid and don't let the tax tail wag the dog. Okay. You want to go make the money. We'll help you keep it. That's our commitment to you. It's going to be done appropriately within the intent and confines of the code. We're going to have a lot of fun together. We do what we do, enjoy life. It's you know, work hard, play harder. And that's our mantra. And looking forward to meeting as many people as we can. So
awesome, Roger. Yeah. It's been fun, my friend.
Appreciate it.
If you're like me, you listen in and you're like, oh, that's what the elites are doing, where they don't have to legally pay taxes anymore. They have an army of Rogers on staff. I think Roger and his team are doing some amazing stuff because their mission is just like mine, is to help the owner operators who are creating the true value in this economy, generating cash flow and equity, save money that is legally theirs so that we can reinvest it to grow the value of our company, or we can diversify outside of our business, and it frees up the cash flow that is one of the biggest constraints. I highly recommend checking out the link in the show notes below. If you're paying over $100,000 in taxes, Roger's team has a lot of different solutions that they can apply depending on where your taxes are coming from, depending on what your goals are, and then making sure that you're taking that money and putting it to work in ways that I think you see fit that are tied to hopefully your target cash flow and equity goals and your goals of independence over your time. On our next episode, I've got Eric Roman on the show, where Eric was a dentist and he ended up scaling up his dentist practice where it was worth $40 million, but he felt stuck because he was balance sheet rich and cash poor. If he would have met someone like Roger, he probably would have freed up some of that cash. But Eric had an issue where he had a bunch of personal stuff going on and he felt stuck. And because he was not having the cash flow that he wanted, he also had the personal stuff. He felt like he had to pull the ripcord. He sold to private equity and it didn't solve his problems. And him and I talk a lot about if he would have had an independence by design ownership framework, it would have helped him think through what is he actually trying to solve for? How could he take more income through distributions, potentially slowing down the growth, replacing some of his stuff in his time at the office, but then also continuing to grow equity value in a way that was balanced so he could focus on his personal life and focus on the things that mattered so that way he didn't make an irrational decision because of the emotional feeling of being stuck. I know you're going to love the interview and the story because it just proves the point that we all need to be thinking about the ownership goals that we have, and then operations should be driving our ownership goals of time and money. Thanks everybody for tuning in, and I hope you enjoyed this episode, and I'll see you next week.